The following message was recorded at the 2013 No Regrets Men's Conference. More information about the conference is available at noregretsconference.org. Feel free to make copies of this message for others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission.
Okay, make sure this is recording. I'm Dave Beck. I'm a member of Southern Lakes Evangelical Free Church down in Elkhorn. I'm your moderator today. I'll be introducing your speaker. And his name is Chris Stukenberg. And before I get any further, I wanted to just remind you, if you do have any cell phones you guys turned on while you were running between locations, make sure you got those silenced. And then at the end, don't forget, if you have the chapel armband, or you know where you're supposed to go, chapel is out and to your left, and the main auditorium is straight out, is out to the right. Okay, so anyway, Chris is a youth pastor at Trinity Evangelical Free Church right here in Milwaukee area, and he comes today speaking from a personal experience, and I think you'll find that it's a very interesting talk. I am looking forward to hearing it myself. I had some time to visit with him earlier, and it was a great visit. So I'll say this, too. From what I've heard and seen from some of the other speakers, I think this is a great end of a breakout for you guys. So without further ado, Chris.
Thank you, Dave. If you didn't get a sheet, I will... Anyone? These will kind of...
Take one and send it back that direction.
I'm going to do my best to keep you with the sheet, okay? So let me just kind of explain a little bit about the whole concept of where this came from and why I speak on this. Full disclosure, I am married, okay? So I just want to make sure that you're aware of that. Don't make that... It's not a bait and switch. It's not one of those things like, dang it, come on, man. Like, I promise, there's good reason why Mike asked me to do this talk. A few years ago, he asked me to speak in the youth track here, and so I did a couple of messages to the students. And afterward, he's like, man, your testimony is really interesting, and I think it would be really good for single guys, whether they're young or old, to listen to your testimony and kind of think through their own life and where they're at. He's like, so would you write a message called Living as a Single Man? And I'm like, sure, I'll do that. So I did it last year. It went really well. He loved it. He said he couldn't stop listening to it on his own podcast later on. So he's like, come back and do it again. I'm like, okay, fine. So that's kind of where I'm at. So just to let you know a little bit, I grew up in a household that wasn't really Christian. My parents ended up getting divorced when I was 16. My mom started following Jesus shortly, you know, right before that, basically. My dad, I still don't really know where he's at with the whole thing. But as I was growing up and I started getting serious about my own faith with Christ, I chose to live sort of a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde kind of life. And I know that's getting more and more popular these days, that whole concept of the story. I don't know if you saw the show that's going to start pretty soon here, or just started, I think, Thursday on NBC about the guy who has a multiple, you know, split personality, and he's one guy during the day and one guy at night. That's really kind of how my life was. I wasn't actually struggling with that concept, but more in the idea that I was living as a Christian during the day, but then where I was letting my heart go and my mind go and everything else caused me to be a totally different person. And so when I was a senior in high school, I fell in love with a girl, and right before I left to go to Moody Bible Institute, we started sleeping together that summer. So then I met Moody Bible Institute, the most, in my opinion, the most haloed of institutions within Chicago. And I'm walking through the hallways where everyone else is walking on clouds and playing halos, and they have this, you know, or playing harps and they have these halos over their head. Everyone's just amazed at how awesome they all are. And, you know, you go to chapel and everyone's just, and I'm living with the deepest, darkest secret in my life. And I didn't tell anyone about it because I was afraid that if I did, I'd get kicked out of school. And so I really chose to live my life submitted to the principles of this world and honestly, the ways that everyone was telling me to live. And so it ended up leaving me, it made me leave Moody and come home to marry this girl. And she broke up with me that summer. And so then I was just kind of sorting my life out and trying to figure out who I was and what I was going to do. And over the process of the next 3 or 4 years, I started deciding not to live the way that I was living and start to put these principles actually in place. And so that's kind of what I want to talk about today. and describe for you the transition of my life. It had nothing to do with my current wife as to what made me change. I changed well before I met her. And in fact, I was convinced that I was going to be single for the rest of my life. And some of you are like, well, I've been struggling with this for a lot longer than you did. I know, but I was a young pastor. I wanted to be in a church, and I wanted to possibly just give my life to the church and not get married. I was reading Paul's message about, you know, being single is better than being married. And I was like, oh, I'll consider this. And little did I know, God had a pastor's daughter waiting for me who would understand what life would be like living with a psychopath like myself. All right, so without further ado, let's kind of dive in. Let's pray really quick, and then we'll get into the rest of it. So, Father, I just pray that this afternoon, as we close this up, I pray for minds that are focused and hearts that are willing to hear. And, Father, I pray that as we're in the middle of the afternoon and some of us are maybe drifting a little bit or feeling like we've just been drinking from a fire hose all day, I pray that this would just bring it all together and that the pieces of the puzzle would fit and we'd leave here feeling that we figured it out and we know kind of how to live this life, even as a single man in a world that's full of so many pressures and other things. So, Father, help us to do that. We pray that in your son's name. Amen. Okay, so there's a couple of realities, and so you've got your sheet. The first part there, I'm just going to go over the realities quick, and then we're going to come back and fill in the blanks later. I'll explain that in a second. So, first off, finances. Whether you have them or whether you don't, it's a reality of a single man trying to figure out how they're going to use their money, what you're going to do with it, what you're going to spend money on, what you're not going to spend money on. Maybe you're worried about rent. You're looking at your friends that are married, and they're all living a different kind of life because there's two salaries coming in or something like that. So whether you have it or you don't, financial, you know, pressures are just one of those realities. The second one is you have friends. And that's an assumption, I understand. Maybe some of us in the room don't. But my hope is that we all feel like we have some friends and they can really affect us and kind of make us move in a direction. And lastly, you have freedom. I remember being an 18-year-old and for the first time in my life not living in my parents' house and trying to figure out what to do with freedom in general. And so we'll come back to that and we'll fill in those blanks. So what are some of the pressures that we're dealing with as single men or that you're dealing with as single men? First off, you're being pressured to just think about the fact that no one else will know. I think we live in a world today where what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. That's not the only concept. I mean, I hear that all over the place now. I don't know about you, but I have kids that work at Pick and Save, and they're like, what happens at Pick and Save stays at Pick and Save. And, you know, I'm like, come on. Like, there's this idea that we can live however we want to live, and no one's going to know what's happening as long as we're not around the people that know us or that kind of thing. So the first off is one of the first pressures is that we have a pressure for how to live life or the way in which we're supposed to live life. And what I'm going to do is you're going to notice I have a lot of blanks to fill out, but behind those, you'll see a lot of parentheses with verses inside of there. Some of those are going to be helpful to deal with the process. Some of those are going to prove my point. And I'm not going to have time to get into all of them, but if you want to go home with this sheet later and just kind of dig into it, trust me, there's going to be a wealth of stuff there. All right? So the first off, in the book of Judges and in 2 Timothy, he describes the last times and what's going to happen. And so the first blank is, it's as good as it gets. The world is going to try to convince us that it's as good as it gets. And second of all, when we screw things up and we do things our own way and not the way that God would want us to do it, it honestly becomes as good as it's going to get. In Judges 21:25, it describes that each man did what was right in his own eyes and didn't do it the way that God would want to do it. And the people of Israel start to say, it's because we don't have a king. We don't have someone that's ruling over us, that's telling us how to live. That's why we're messing up. And so there's this kind of pressure that like, well, you know, God isn't here right now. He's not with you, so you can do whatever you want to do. It doesn't really matter. This is as good as it's going to get. And second of all, when you do things the wrong way, that ends up being as good as it's going to get. Let me explain a little further. The second one is no one followed the way. In the book of Judges, you know, a lot of people, I don't know if you actually have ever spent time studying that book or reading that book. It's one of the most depressing books in the Bible. I mean, you've got people slaughtering each other. You've got an entire tribe of men that are just almost wiped out from Israel. The tribe of Benjamin just almost gets wiped out. In the meantime of that, there was a woman who was married to a guy, and he gives her to a bunch of men to rape her, and they rape her all night long, and in the morning she's dead. And so his way of dealing with that is he cuts her into 12 parts and stuffs her in envelopes and ships her to different parts of Israel so that all of Israel can mourn with him. You're like, what is redeeming in that story? There is nothing redeeming in that story. The point of Judges is like, when humans get control and we do things our own way, things get really, really, really bad. Okay? So if that's the way things get really bad, that's what it looks like when we follow our own way and do it our own way. And I remember getting a point in my life where I had to realize that what was happening with me, that I was deciding to live my own way and not God's way, and it was going to cause me to be messed up. And then in 2 Timothy, the last blank there is, the end will be godless. Whether you believe that we're close to the end now or that we're in the end, various people have different opinions on this. The truth is you're seeing the world kind of slip away, right? This place is getting harder and harder to be a Christian man, especially a Christian single man. I remember when my mom and he became my stepdad later on, but when they first started dating, they had people at church coming up to them and saying, so have you guys, you know. She's like, what? No, why would we do that? We're like, well, you know, a man has needs and a woman has needs. And she's like, that's not how we're going to live. That's not the way. And that was within the church. Do you know what I'm saying? And like, that's like the way things get. You know, like people are getting more and more. It's like, it's okay. You can do whatever you want to do. There's no, you know, there's no reality of any of this. And so let's just kind of let things happen and the pressures. Okay. So my reflection for you, you don't have to spend time on this. Trust me, I'm going to keep talking really fast. But I would just ask you to consider, what are some of the ways that you're denying the King, the God of the universe who created you, loves you, and is looking for the day that he's going to spend an eternity with you? In what ways are you denying that reality and choosing to live your own way? That's a question I had to come to grips with as I was dealing with my own story. All right, sex. One of the pressures that you're going to be dealing with, if you haven't already, and you're like, duh, okay, yes, I can't walk through a supermarket without being, you know, thrown upon by something, whether it's a magazine or a person or, right? I mean, you know what I'm talking, yeah, some, okay. Are we living in the same world here? Okay. Just because I'm married doesn't mean it's gone away. Like, there, you, trust me, you are being bombarded with sexual things. Tomorrow, you know, we have a big Super Bowl party with our students at our youth ministry. And I actually have a group of people that are on camera duty. And their job is every single time a commercial gets a little bit iffy, they jump in front of the camera and start dancing around so none of the students watch it. And then we block it real quick and put up like a thing that says like, we've had technical difficulties. We'll be back. You know what I mean? So like I'm like so worried about the fact that a GoDaddy commercial is going to come on, right? Or that car is going to become a woman in a red dress. And, it, you know, like it's just messed up like the way it goes. So with that in mind, sex is all over the place. So the blank there is you have access to everything. And second of all, it is assumed that you're going to do it. Whether this is your non-Christian friends or whether this is some of your friends who are Christians who are not walking with God, it's just assumed that you're just going to do whatever. And for me, sex, that's a lot bigger than just actually physically having sex with someone. Sure, prostitution is available to you, and it's assumed that if you're not getting some, you're going to go find it. But I'll even go further than that. What are you doing at 2 a.m.? First of all, what are you doing up? Second of all, what are you doing on the internet? What are you looking at? What are you being a part of? And I'm not trying to guilt you in anything. It's just we have access to anything. You know, back when I was a kid, we rode our bikes out into a cornfield, and lo and behold, there was a box in the middle of a cornfield full of pornography. So we all tore out a page and took it home. What would you do as an 11-year-old boy, right? You have to do that. I mean, that's just, okay, yeah, so you're falling into my trap here. Like, it's assumed that you're going to be a part of this. And so we all tore it out, and, you know, we went home, and our hearts were racing, and we're like, oh, this is crazy. What is this? Oh, my goodness. Like, that's what we're dealing with. And today, it's not even that difficult. You don't have to ride your bike out in a cornfield to get access to pornography. You just have to Google it, you know? As a youth pastor dealing with junior hires, I don't even talk about what Google could do because I don't want the kids going home and typing in porn into Google to find out what it actually was, which one of my youth pastor's kids did that when he came home from a youth group lesson one time. He's like, I wonder what that is. And he typed it in. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. Like, we are bombarded with what we have access to. Okay? So, drugs. Not going to spend a ton of time on this. Hopefully, it's not a huge issue. But if it is, 1 Peter 4:7 just talks about how nothing in this world should be really causing us to be in an alternate reality. That's the idea of things should not be affecting us. Drugs should not be making us think what we're not supposed to be thinking. We should really be in sober mind, in right mind at all times. All right? Gaming. There's a pressure for you. Now, some of you are like, I don't even know what you're talking about. All right. It's an issue to me of time and financial stewardship. Okay? And I had kids that were 3 days after Call of Duty 4 came out. They were already talking about having prestiged once. Okay, and I'm like, good for you. That's a well-spent 4 days. You know what I mean? Like, when Halo 4 came out, three guys were like, I might fail this semester. And I'm like, that's just wrong. Like, you're missing the point here. Plus the fact that the games cost $60. And we don't really think about the fact that you'll take out there's people that I know, I'll be careful to throw out. There are people that I know that take out student loans just so they can afford the games that they want to buy. It seems like a really brilliant financial strategy that's going to serve you really well in the rest of life. Sorry if you're one of those people. It's okay. We can talk later. All right. TV usage, Ephesians 4:17-5:21, just kind of talks about being children of light and living differently than what we normally live and how we are. Okay? So, TV usage, what do we do there? We should probably just think about it. So the pressures are we're being told how to live. We have access to sex. We have access to drugs. We have access to gaming. We have access to TV usage. All right. How then should we live? Okay? So flip the sheet over, and we've got some core values. These are things that I had to start learning to live as if I was going to do what God wanted me to do and to honor him. Okay? So the first one is the most important because everything else that we're going to talk about today filters out of this concept. Okay? You can't take this apart and do this without the first part here. And the first part is the good news. Okay? Now, I don't know if you grew up in church, or I don't know if you're going to church now, I don't know if you're a part of a family of believers, but so often, with the message that we as pastors give people is so often, live this way. Don't do video games. Don't do sex. Don't do pornography. And it comes across that way. Even though I know most of the pastors that I work with and deal with, we don't mean to come across this way, but that's how it filters to us. Because we're missing out the whole first part of this, and that is the fact that Jesus paid it all. And so I gave you the Romans road there. If you ever want to memorize some verses to help your friends see Jesus clearly, that's a great way to do that. But Jesus paid it all. So how is that good news? Well, second of all, so often we focus on the cross and the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And by all means we should, because it is the most amazing event that happened in history. If you don't realize it, every event in history was leading up to that, and every event in history since then has, you know, filtered out of that. So that one moment, the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, changed history. But one of the things that we neglect about the good news of the gospel is the fact that Jesus, second blank there, taught us how to live. Jesus didn't just come to live, die, and then raise from the dead and then ascend into heaven. And not only is he coming again, but he taught us how to live right here and now. Like, the reason why the Gospels are so important for us to read is we get in touch with the Savior himself. We get to see what he did, how he did it, what he said, and what he was doing, and how that all works out. And so, ironically, though, so many of us are like, well, I can never quite be like Jesus, so I'm not even going to try. And so we would rather memorize a verse from Colossians or a verse from Philippians or something like that, as opposed to going to the source. When in John 14:15, Jesus says, if you love me, you will obey what I command. This isn't a mean general saying, get in line right now and do it the way I want you to do it. He says, if you love me, if you're going to spend time with me, if you want this to be a relationship with me, for a single man, if you want to have the right relationship with your wife one day, that hopefully you're dreaming about, or maybe if you've given up on that dream, the relationship with your Savior, that should be more important than that anyways, you need to get that relationship with him right. And you've got to learn to start living the way that he taught you how to live. And so for me, that was, instead of letting my heart be in control and other parts of my body be in control, you know, the lack of being completely vulgar, I had to start realigning myself with his way and letting him put himself in charge of me. So that I started studying his actual commands and saying, what did Jesus say here? And what does this mean for me? And when you start with this as your mindset, that Jesus paid it all, he taught you how to live, he becomes your brand new reality. That's the next blank. And if Jesus becomes the new reality, the fact is you're not defining yourself as a single man looking for a woman, or a single man who's been divorced for X amount of years, or a single man who doesn't get to talk to their kids anymore. None of those things matter. What matters is that he becomes your new reality. So let me put it this way. I don't know if you like sci-fi or not, or time travel concepts, but if you can just stop with me and think about this for a moment. Because Jesus died, rose again, and paid the price for you, you already are made perfect before God. And you might be like, well, I know that that day is coming. Yes, but in reality, that day has already come. In an eternal scale, you know what I mean? Like, you're here. You're like in time, okay? But right now, God already sees you as his child. So the truth is, there already is a new reality. You're already in another universe in that sense. And God's already your king. He's already made control over your life. And there's no reason to keep living the way that everyone else wants you to live and doing all the other things. Back to what I just said a little bit ago about the book of Judges. Everyone thought they could live however they wanted to live because it didn't really matter because there was no king here. Every one of us is a part of the king's family now. We're one of his warriors. We're one of his servants, the people that he were fighting for. Really, ultimately, it's all under the tutelage of our king, our God. So because that is the new reality, how then shall we live? Is this making sense? You with me? Okay. So what I'm going to do also, so you have these Bible passages, but underneath there, you're also going to notice I'm an avid reader. I don't know if your pastors are, but I just love reading lots and lots of books. And so I thought it would be helpful for me, if you're like struggling with one of these categories and you're like, I really want to get a better grasp on this, I gave you the best books that I've found on this concept. Okay, and every one of these, I checked the bookstore this morning, every one of these is in the bookstore. So if before you leave today, if you're like, man, I really would love to get a better grasp of the gospel, look, the Gospel by J.D. Greer, I can't recommend any, right now, that's, I think, man, that book was phenomenal. I've been passing it on to my leaders, my students, or Not a Fan by Kyle Eidelman, same concept, more to a younger audience, but same concept. Just starting to figure out who Jesus was and how that makes us live. Okay, so if we've got a core value, that is the good news of Jesus Christ is the filter by which we see the rest of our life, what's the first core value underneath that we see? First off, purity. Okay, this is more than virginity maintenance, boys. Okay, this is not about, well, I kept it in my pants, so then I'm good. Like, purity is bigger than that. It's for me, it was realizing that the relationship that I had in high school started with a kiss and then led to some curiosity and then led to more curiosity. And as that was happening, my heart was leaping out of my chest, wanting something else. And instead of me confronting that and going to someone and talking about it, I kept letting things go further and further until I wasn't a virgin anymore. But we so often in the pastoral field talk about, you know, virginity maintenance. If you're, you know, I used to make kids do promise rings or do like a purity pledge. You know, like, I'm going to be a virgin until I'm married. Great. But then I had kids come to me like, oh, you know, we were just messing around with some oral. Or we were just, you know, kind of fooling around one night and we kind of let things go a little further. But we didn't have sex, so it's cool. And I'm like, guys, this isn't what we're talking about. And so Philippians 4, 8, and 9 talks a little bit about whatever is true, noble, right, pure, holy, that whole line of, that's a great verse to memorize, by the way, if you're struggling with this area. Let that start seeping in and becoming the way that you're going to be. And second of all, this is more than passive living. I swear if I ever get an opportunity to do so, I want to write a book on how our generation is becoming more and more passive. And we make everyone else we're the victim because everyone else messed us up. Like, everyone else screwed us over. So, like, let's just kind of, oh, man, I can't believe I didn't get that job. You know, like, I don't know. Like, sorry, that was a video game if you didn't. Okay, like, we get so worried. Like, we're just like, oh, I don't really know why that happened to me. And we just live passively. We just kind of let life bounce us around. And so then we, in the sitcoms, men, are treated like complete idiots all the time, right? We don't know how to grocery shop. We don't know how to watch our kids. We don't know how to be a good husband. We'd rather be on the golf course than hanging out at home. We'd rather be, you know, suffering at work in a job that we hate, but hopefully making enough money, right? Or taking out the seventh mortgage on our house like Homer Simpson because we want a new bicycle. You know, like, whatever it is, like, we just get this horrible mindset given to us about who we are. And so purity, I want to say that it's more than living passively. It's starting to be active about your thoughts, active about your heart, active about the way that you want to think about women and deal with women in general. Okay? I'm going to keep moving. I'm going to give you some questions, time at the end if you want that, all right? So another core value. We need to be wise. We need to become people who are people of wisdom, known as wisdom. So first off, it's a spirit thing. This isn't wisdom because you've just gotten really smart, okay? Just because you went to MIT, if you did, congratulations. If you did, it doesn't make you, like, wise. All it makes you is you have a degree or you're smart. Wisdom is learning how to see the future differently and understand that maybe God's in charge and there's other ways to look at things. And so letting the Holy Spirit lead us in this new reality that we have, and letting Him guide us and making us wise. It stands in the face of human wisdom. I can't tell you how many times after that girl broke up with me, did I tell you that part of the story? That summer I came home and she broke up with me. Okay, after she broke up with me, my friends, we would sit around at a pizza place or a bar and just kind of talk about things and like, what is going on? And when I would start to describe what God was doing to my life here and how He was realigning my priorities and my lifestyle, everyone thought I was crazy. Going a little too nuts with the Jesus thing, right? And these were Christians. But, you know, like, I understand, Chris, that you want to be a pastor, but, you know, you're just going a little too far. And I'm like, oh, this is bigger than a pastoral thing. It's about starting to let the human wisdom that had seeped into my mind be pushed out so I could let God have control. Did you follow? Okay, all right. Last off, it affects all of life. Wisdom, true wisdom, good wisdom. It affects every area of life, not just a few. Okay, so look, one of my resources there is the book of Proverbs. Okay, that should be hopefully a little obvious, but if not, there you go. All right, we need to have an eternal focus, okay? Instead of seeing the here and now, we need to start thinking about that. And so Colossians 3, 1 and 1 through 4 is great for that, but look up is the concept there, the blank there. Look up. Start living a life that's a little more focused on what God wants you to do as opposed to the way that this is all going. And the cool thing is when you start to do that, you don't see things the same way. So let me give you a great example of this right now in student ministry. Okay, so I'm a youth pastor. I work with a bunch of young boys and girls, right? And some of the girls are 16, 17, 18 years old. Now, I'm old now. I have a lot more gray hair than I used to, and I have two kids, and, you know, Everyone kind of just, the girls don't treat me the way they did when I first started in ministry. You know what I'm saying? When you're the 22-year-old intern and you're single, all the girls are like, I cannot wait to marry Chris. He's going to be great. But here's the thing. Hold on. Here's the thing. The deal is when I started walking with God and letting wisdom sink in, letting the Spirit lead, okay? And I started getting an eternal focus. I started thinking this through, and I'm like, wait. So all these girls really think that marrying me would be the best thing in the world. All they see is the 1 hour a week me. When I'm up in front of people and I'm talking and people are liking what I'm saying or they feel captivated by that, and all they see is that. They're not seeing the struggle that I'm having with pornography. They're not seeing the struggle that I'm having dealing with masturbation or any of the other things that I deal with. Like, they're not seeing that struggle. They think that I'm perfect because they see me in a church context after I've prayed for 3 or 4 hours that day to set my heart right. Do you know what I'm saying? And so the image they have of me isn't even who I am. Second of all, if I submitted to what they want me to do, and this is true, like if I'm counseling a woman now and I can tell that she's attaching feelings to me, if I actually acted on those and she like forced me to act on them, you see how I just played the victim thing like some of us do? If that happened, if we did that, do you notice that immediately I'm not who I thought or who she thought I was? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, she thinks I'm the greatest husband in the world, and it would be so great to be married to Chris. Or you know, like, you follow me? And as I started working through the wisdom thing and putting my mind in an eternal focus, I realized my reality isn't even what people think I am. Like, she thinks I'm the greatest thing, and if I sleep with her, I'm not who she thought I was. And so as I started working that through my mind, it made me start looking at my waitresses different. Right? Maybe your bartender, if you've got a favorite one. Or the girl at the store who I thought was super attractive. And as I started doing that, I started realizing that I'm moving in life in a direction that I want to move it. And if I start looking in an eternal focus, I'm going, God, who do you want me to see? And how do you want me to see them? Hopefully that makes sense in a better way than the story I was telling earlier. Okay? So, and the last one is being a Christian is getting so hard to do what I'm about to say. But this is really what Jesus was all about. We are supposed to be countercultural. That's the blank. Don't conform is being countercultural. So don't conform. Don't be like everyone wants you to be. That's super hard. I'm not going to lie. It's just not easy. But that's what you got to do. So what does not conforming look like? Flip back to the front side. Let's fill in a few of these blanks, okay? So being countercultural looks like this. First off, under the reality of finances, God is faithful if money is plentiful or if it's scarce. That is countercultural. God is faithful, whether you have a lot of money or you have a little. God is faithful. People don't act like that. If you have a lot of money, spend it however you want to spend it. Right? A little Justin Bieber. Okay, no. You just do however you want to do it. That's the way it's going to be. If you have nothing, then it's like, why didn't God give me more? The truth is, God is faithful, whether you have a lot or whether you have a little. And the neat thing is, there's a lot of people that are fantastic financial advisors that help us live both ways. There's a guy at our church that I swear he must give away 60% of his income. He's a big wig at one of the big companies in town. He makes a ton of money. And I know he's dumping a ton of money because when I go to his house, I see a stack of missionaries that he's supporting. That's above the giving that he gives to our church. But he's completely restructured his financial life because he knows that God gave him what he has, and he's going to give it all away. That's not Bill Gates. You know what I mean? Like, some of us are like, man, if Bill Gates just did that, the world would be a better place. This is you. You can do this. You can figure this out. God is faithful, whether it's there or not. So how do you do that? Good stewardship is a necessity. That's the next blank. Good stewardship is a necessity. And what does that mean? The last blank, debt is never a good thing. This is coming from a single man when I was single, who had credit card debt, school loan debt, other debt lining up, and I was making $11,000 a year as an intern. That was a wise move, Chris, right? That was a bad move. I don't know if, hopefully you caught that sarcasm. Okay, so it was a dumb move, and some of us are like, man, you can restructure your life now to live the way you want to live. And so underneath there, I gave you some ideas. Money Answer book by Dave Ramsey, DaveRamsey.com, my total makeover. Basically, anything by Dave Ramsey will start getting you thinking this direction, and then you can start realigning your life, set up your budget, and realize that, man, I'm spending $240 a month on video games. Maybe that's wrong. Maybe. I don't know. It's for God to decide, but you're in a new reality, so don't live the way you used to. All right, friends. What's so great about friends? The first blank there is where the head goes, the body goes. My dad and my mom were still married, and I was a little kid. I walked into the kitchen one day, and my dad goes, hey, Chris, you want to learn something? I'm like, sure. He grabbed the back of my head, and he's like, where the head goes, the body goes. And I went across the... Now, it wasn't violence. Okay, you're all looking at me like he was abusive. No, but I definitely went from one end of the kitchen to the other. And for some reason, that's one of the things that he taught me that actually stuck, is the idea that where our head goes, our body goes. When you're starting to think a certain way and do that kind of thing, and with our friends cause us to think a certain way. And where our head goes, our body goes. Okay? So when I'm sitting around at the table in high school and all my friends were talking about women and girls and the way that they would be, you know, the people they were having sex with, that kind of thing, I wasn't realizing that my head was starting to go where my body wanted to go. And in a couple of years, it came to fruition. Do you know what I'm saying? Okay. Culture. The next blank, culture and the crowds corrupt. You get in a big group of people, you'll follow whatever they do. You get in a culture that's kind of making you think that I'm going to do this all the way. They corrupt us. They make us who we don't want to be. And you're like, well, that's not totally true. Why do you think big churches exist? Because people want to be in a crowd of people that are going in a certain direction. And for the most part, one of the reasons why I love some really big churches is that there's some really awesome people in there that are helping each other live out the call of Jesus Christ, right? If I have a kid show up to youth group and we have a low night, you know, maybe this year we had a weird night where like 10 kids showed up. There's a couple kids that like came to the door and like turned around and left because they're like, I want to be in a crowd. They want to be with people that they know that they have people that are going together with them on this, okay? Maybe you don't see our species that way, but we like crowds, and so we're going to get corrupted. Or positively moved is the other possibility. That's what I'm kind of making a sense for. All right. So third off, be a learner, not a taker. The best thing about the word disciple in the Bible is we don't even realize what it means. It meant learner. It doesn't mean sponge. It doesn't mean absorber. It doesn't mean great preaching listener. It means learner. It means that you're affecting your life and trying to figure out how you're going to follow Jesus better and doing that. So as you learn from him, you act it out. And as you act it out, here's the really cool thing, you pass it on. And that's what the real concept of a learner was, not just being a taker. And so often people come to me and they're like, I'm really struggling with this. I realize, like, who are you infecting? Who are you working with in life? You're not working with anyone? Well, of course. We've hit a roadblock here and it's you. You're not letting it pass on. And so you're not becoming a learner. You're just taking from us. And that's going to work great for a little while, but then you're going to fail, I promise, okay? So, be a learner, not a taker. Last off, be an example. 1 Timothy 4:12 was one of my favorite verses when I was young. You know, don't let anyone look down upon you because you were young. I remember taking that verse and just stopping right there and being like, this is, yes. You know, don't let anyone look down on me because I'm young. Take that, church. You know, like, you can't tell me what to do. Moody Bible Institute, take that. Okay. Don't let anyone look down on you because you were young. The last part of that verse is, but set an example for them in life, love, purity. Da, da, da. If I would have read the rest of that verse, maybe my life would have gone a little different. Like, it's not about not being having the pride of, like, no one can look down on me because I'm young, but it's about setting an example. So, young men, if you're in here, learn to set an example. I would love for every one of you to leave this session and let that sink in. And later on, people are like, man, I don't know what's... But he is a leader for a 28-year-old. Or he is a leader for a 30-year-old, or name whatever age. But I'm saying, I'm more using the first part of that verse, is don't let anyone look down on you because you're young, okay? Older guys, trust me, you can still be a leader in that. But I'm just saying, be an example. Let people go, yeah, I want to follow that guy. There's something up about him. And it's not about, like, he's a creepy, weird Christian. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, I'm not asking you to do that. I'm just asking you, follow Jesus. And so everyone else is like, man, I want to emulate that. And then as they look to you, you start pointing them to Jesus, and they realize that all along, it wasn't you they were seeing, it was him. How many of you guys went to the Toby Mac Winter Jam thing last night? No one? Great. Never mind. I won't use that example. All right. I went there with my five-year-old last night. She just, it was funny. All right. Where am I at? Okay. So I gave you some books there. Flashbang, if you want to laugh hysterically while being convicted to the core, Flashbang is one of the best books for that I've ever read. There's a part in there where he opens up a door and it slices his foot open and you're just like squeamish, and then he makes a point. You're like, read it. It's good. All right. Lastly, freedom. So one of our realities is freedom, okay? So what does that mean? First off, our days are numbered. Live like it. We're not supposed to be here forever. So live like that. You've only got a little bit of time, so use it. Use it to your advantage. I would love to hear God say, well done, good and faithful servant, when I get to heaven. And as a single man, when I finally got to the point where that girl had passed, you know, out of my life, I wanted to say passed on, but that would have been a bad, you know. That's not true. She's still alive. But if I would have just let that fade, and as I let that fade and started living my life, I was like, man, my days are numbered. And that's why I was like, I could be single for the rest of my life and work for the church. I could see myself impacting young men and for the rest of my life and just kind of pushing people to follow Jesus. All right. So if our days are numbered, live like it. That means we need to chase the right goals. chase the right goals. Now, I'm going to step on some toes here. I'm going to apologize now, but I'm going to do it anyway. Ready? First goal that maybe isn't the right goal that we should be following is games. I love video games. Why do I love video games? Because not only is it something that I can completely get good at and control, absolutely, and I become sort of a god within that game, but I can hit reset if I doesn't make it. And I mean, here's what settled into me. So I was a single man, and I was playing Civilization III. It had just come out. I like turn-based games. I like strategy. I like thinking things through. So I get about 2,000 years into the game. That sounds like a lot, but it only takes about an hour and a half. You know, you can go fast. So I'm moving through the game, and I realize that just down the road, the nation of Babylonia had built the pyramids, which was going to affect my construction costs for the rest of the game. So I went to autosave, and I found about 30 years beforehand, or 30 turns beforehand, if I would have just put one more worker in that city and developed that. That doesn't make any sense to you. But I figured, I figured out if I would have gone back and done that, that I could have built the pyramids faster than the Babylonians, and then I'd be set for the rest of the game. So what did I do? I clicked on the autosave thing, went back to that place, fixed it, and went back. And I was like, man, I am so powerful. I just cheated at a game to get control. And so many of us are like doing that. Like, that's just how we think and live. Like, and you love it because, you know, you can pick up Call of Duty and you can start pwning the noobs really quickly. You know what I mean? Like, and like, but here's, let me make my final point here, okay? So if games are one of those things that we're just like totally, we love control and we want to do that. And as men, we like being in charge and no one else respects us. So I can be the general of my army or the emperor of my kingdom or whatever. Let me put it this way. You're never going to walk into a job interview and pass your resume across the desk. And they're going to be like, so why should I hire you? And you're going to be like, I prestiged 3 times in Call of Duty.
I'm sure there are.
Well, I'm sure there are. That's my point. Like, we live in a culture where it's just like assume that. And if you're a video game designer, my apologies, that probably will work, okay? But the rest of us, like no financial institution is going to be like, really? Oh, wow. Oh, man, you're a level 24 orc in World of Warcraft. That's fantastic. I mean, like no one's ever going to do that. Like, that's just not real life. And so the fact that it's not real life, it's a pressure that we're feeling, it's a goal that we're chasing after that doesn't have anything. Your Xbox Live, you know, or your PlayStation 3 level, whatever that is, it doesn't mean anything. It's going to vanish. And so let's start building things that actually matter as opposed to those goals. Now, hopefully you're hearing through all of this. I'm not saying that video games are evil. I'm not saying they're the worst thing. But if you're spending 8 hours a day doing it, that might be a reason why you're single. Okay. Like I said, I'm going to step on some toes. My apologies. All right. Second one is this. All right. Second blank is this. Self-absorption. I know so many guys who got you know, they were single and they got their first job and they were making a ton more money than I ever probably will. And they were just living life and they were just the king of the castle and they were in charge. And their life was all about them. And self-absorption was the thing. And by the way, no woman could ever satisfy them. And so what happens is they get caught in this life of like, I'm just all about me. And so they can sleep with whoever because it's all about them. And, you know, maybe in the beginning they were a really solid Christian who was walking with Jesus, but then they slipped up like I did. But instead of starting to follow God in the midst of that, they just took that as a notch on their belt and then they kept adding notches. And next thing you know, they're not even a human anymore. They're just a sex machine. So they got so self-absorbed and that's a goal that they started chasing. They didn't even realize it and they missed out on what God had in store for them. Okay, so that's the second one. Third one is this, relationships. Being single, I know that there's a desire to be with someone. I know that it's like, and some of us maybe have pure motives in our hearts, and we're like, it would just be great to wake up in the morning and look over and realize that she's mine. I understand that. And maybe some of you are like totally obsessed with one girl who has gone through multiple guys and you're just kind of hanging on like a Taylor Swift song waiting for her to notice you. Sorry. I like metaphors if you haven't noticed. All right, so you've got this. You're like, hey, I know, and she might be worth waiting for and go for it, but that should not be the only goal of your life. In the meantime, there are other things to do. God is going to use you in multiple ways. And I'll give you some examples of those on the backside. But relationships should not be the goal that we're chasing after. And lastly, money. Okay? It's sort of similar to self-absorption, but it's different in the fact that some guys that I know are only after money. I don't know how many of you watch Suits. But Harvey Specter is one of the coolest characters in all of television, right? That guy, I'll be lying if I didn't think there were a few nights where I'm like, I kind of would like to be Harvey Specter. I mean, that guy, phenomenal. The amount of money he makes, the suits that he wears, the cars that he has, the women that he has access to. In my heart of hearts, that's there. And I was a young man who had my grandpa was vice president of an American Family Insurance for a long time. So my family has money if I want it. And I grew up as a high schooler thinking, man, I was a valedictorian in my class. I had full ride scholarships to 3 state schools, and I chose Moody Bible Institute. So I had to come to grips with the fact of, was I willing to just chase money or did I want something else in life? Is money a bad thing? As a pastor to you, no. I would love for you to make money. I would love for you to go to my church. I would love for you to be, you know what I mean? Like, let's just be honest. You know, it's nice to be able to have a church that has resources and be able to go places. Money built this building. And the fact that Elmbrook has existed for as long as it has and done all the things that it has, this conference itself, think of how many people are blessed by this. So money has, there's some good stuff that comes with it. But it should not be the goal that we're chasing after. If you end your life sitting on a pile of gold, you're just a dragon, and you're going to die just like everybody else, and that stuff's going to fade. You with me? Okay. So there's some bad rules to follow. So flip back to the other side, and let me give you some practical advice, things that kind of helped me out, all right? So first off, in our relationship with God, if you have a relationship with the Lord, I hope you do, first off is you have to let Christ be that new reality for you, okay? He has already fought the battle. He's already won the fight. He has to be your new reality. Let him be that reality. Okay. Second of all, and I chose this one actually only because of the name of the conference, is be transformed. Don't just be who you used to be. Let God bust through parts of your life. Open those things up to him. When you're in your prayer life and you realize, and God's kind of whispering to you and going, man, you're really struggling with pornography here. Like, it might be an addiction. Go to XXXChurch.com and download their $99 program. That'll help you kind of work through that addiction. It'll get you involved in other guys that'll make you talk about it. Get a filter on your computer, covenanteyes.com. Go to some of these places and download that stuff. Those are in there, by the way, as other resources back on the other side on the purity thing. You've got access to things. We live in a day and age where you've got people that will help protect you. The problem is, you and I, in our heart of hearts, you don't want anyone else to have control. You just don't, and I don't either. I know that. But there's something about, because Christ is our new reality, that since we're underneath his kingship, that we now live a different way. And I'm willing to let someone else into my life and see that I have a struggle with pornography and deal with me on a weekly basis about it. Okay? So be transformed. Be different. And the last one is put the time in that it takes. I don't know how many of you have started like a new job recently, but think about all the jobs you've ever started in your life. Maybe you worked in the fast food, you know, area or you know, some retail. Some of you are looking at me scared, so clearly you were a part of one of those at one point. All right, so let's say that you were, you know, when you first started, when I first worked at Walmart, okay, I stepped into that job scared to death because I didn't want to work there, first of all. Second of all, it was scared to death because I'm like, man, there is so much to learn and so many things to do, and I'm doing all these modules, and I'm like, if I don't learn how to type that number into this thing so that thing will be, and I was so freaked out. But if you waited 3 months in, I was running pretty well and doing pretty decent at it, right? And after a couple of years at Walmart, I was being asked if I wanted to be a manager. Now, I definitely didn't want to be a manager. So that, you know what I mean? But, or like, you know, you first started working at McDonald's and it was like, man, this is brutal. I don't know if I can ever keep up. Remember those days when your manager's first yelling at you, like, I can't go fast enough. I can't do this. Or like when I painted houses for a summer, I remember like, my arm hurt, and I couldn't figure it out. But after 2 months, like, I could paint pretty quickly, and I got pretty good at it, and I was able to trim it. You're able to do this with every other area of your life, but yet when I talk about your relationship with God, you don't want to put the time in. Because you start off, and it's scary, and it's frightening, and it's like, I can't get to the top of that mountain. And maybe you look at your pastors, and you're like, they are just so holy compared to me. Once again, you're doing what those girls do, and they're putting us on a pedestal. We're just guys. We're guys that made a lot of dumb mistakes for the most part. And the reason why we're doing what we're doing is because we want to help you not make those same dumb mistakes. All right? It's just about stepping in. So what did it look like for me? When I finally got serious about it, I'm like, I'm going to follow God. I'm going to do this the right way. I woke up earlier. I set my alarm for half an hour earlier. Did that mean I had to change my life the night before? Yeah. I had to go home a little earlier. I had to explain to my friends, like, I got to wake up tomorrow for work. And before I wake up for work, I'm actually going to spend some time in God's Word so I can let it soak in and do what it needs to do. You following me here? Like, it's all about putting the time in and letting it be different. Okay, second of all, accountability. You've got to have it. So get someone to help you. Anyone. That's my response to anyone to help you. Someone to help you. Make it someone that you can trust. But find someone, anyone, that will help you dig into the deepest parts of your life. Maybe it's your pastor. Maybe it's a small group leader. Maybe it's someone that you respect and love, that you know. There's been statistics recently done about high schoolers. And the high schoolers who don't fall away when they move into college, there's one statistic that's true across the board. They have five people in their life who are discipling them. That's the magic number. So me as a youth pastor, guess what my job is? Getting those kids involved with five people. Notice that's not just me, because I'm not going to be available to them when they graduate. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have seven more years worth of kids coming that I've got to take care of, and I've got a lot more problems at church that I can't drive down to UWM and deal with you because the girl broke up with you, right? Or I can't drive down to UWM and hang out with you because Panda Express is closed. Like, that's, I have a life and a job, and you've got to have people in your life that you can count on when I'm not going to be there, and so there's got to be five people. For you, it's kind of probably the same thing. You should have a pastor. You have a small group leader. If your dad's not around, find a dad. One of the things about my parents getting divorced is the reason why I'm even remotely successful this time, because of that time in my life when it was dark, my stepdad stepped in and became my dad. My youth pastor became my discipler. Gary Gordon, one of our worship leaders, became a discipler. I had two other guys that became disciplers. Yeah, I got you. So that was huge. It was huge for me to find somebody, anybody. All right, the Bible. Spend time in it daily. Some of you are thinking about this woman, and you're like, she would be awesome to be with. And if she wrote you a letter scented with her perfume, you would hide underneath your pillow. You'd read it every night. You'd deal with it every single... Right? Am I right? If that girl that you're thinking about, if she just knew you existed, first of all, and wrote you that letter, you would never let that thing out of your sight. You'd be totally... And yet on your nightstand sits the book that will change your life. And it's God's love letter to you, and you're worried about reading it because you don't have enough time, or I'm too tired, or I wouldn't be able to watch Suits, or I wouldn't be able to hang out with my friends at the office, which that's about to end. So you have a whole half an hour a week's about to open up to you. So start using it. All right, so, I'm just kidding. All right, so get in it daily and use that person for accountability to get into it with you. By the way, if you're like, I don't understand the Bible at all, find a pastor and just start talking with them. We don't mind having people come to our office once a week and just want to talk to us about the Bible. If anything, that would make us so happy because we're dealing with so many other things that we shouldn't have to be dealing with, partly because those people aren't in the Bible. Do it. And if you're like, I don't have a pastor in my life, find me on Twitter, Chris Stukenberg. Find me on Facebook, Christopher Stukenberg. I can't guarantee I'll give you a ton of time, but maybe I'll start a Bible study with a bunch of you, and I don't know. Who knows? Find somebody that'll work that with you. The last one is this, okay? So as a single man, a lot of times we end up getting shifted in our job because our bosses think about us because we don't have a family. They know that they're not brooding a bunch of people, and a lot of us are more mobile than other people. And if you're not here yet, you know, like I have a cousin who just became sort of a lower-level executive at Goodyear. They flew him to Africa, Germany, somewhere in South America and somewhere in Asia, all within the first month. He was home like 3 days. They like shipping us around because they think that we're mobile. We can do whatever we want to do, okay? So if you're in a new surrounding, here's what you have to do. First thing, this was helpful to me. Find a church. Find a new church. And don't just go to church, but be a part of a family. So find a church, a Bible-believing church, and become a part of that family. Second of all, ask someone about being a mentor, whether that's someone that you're the town that you're from. You know, let's say that tomorrow you find out you're going to be shipped to Cleveland. It would probably be Monday, actually. But let's say, so you wake up, you go to work, and they're like, hey, we need you to go to Cleveland for 4 months. There's a project we need to take care of. Get in touch with the people here so they know you're going, and they can help touch base with you and keep you accountable when you're there. But find a church there and get connected with them. And there's a lot of ways to do that, okay? So if you need help with that, email me, and I'll tell you how. And the last one is start changing your habits now, so that when you do get asked to go to a new surroundings, you go somewhere else, that you're able to just kind of deal with it in a little different way. Okay? All right. I spoke super, super fast. I'm still not giving you a ton of time for questions. All right. So I'll take one if you have time, but hopefully this makes sense. I'm trying to be as practical as I can. These are the things that helped me to grow and become the person I wanted to become. And then when I met my wife, she was like, man, you're different. And I'm like, thank you. So, yes.
What was that about wisdom? It's a what thing? I missed that.
It's a spirit thing.
Okay.
Yep, it's not just about being wise. It's about letting the Spirit lead and letting Him be the wisdom for us.
And the
so.
Second one stands in the face of?
Human wisdom.
Oh, okay.
So it's not the same as normal. That's the same kind of thing, but it's just wanted to make it double.
Okay.
Yep, no problem. Any questions? If you need to chat, I'm up here. Let me pray for you, and you guys can go and finish up the conference, all right? So, Father, I pray for these men. I thank you so much for them being in here with me in this session. I hope that some of this made sense, and that a lot of it is going to become something that will be practically helpful for them. Lord, I pray that you'd help them to do that. I pray that today would not just be a day that they went to a conference, but a day that they left and went, I'm going to do this. I'm going to follow God and do it the right way and let Him be in charge. And so, Father, I pray for strength for them to be able to do that. I pray for wisdom. And I pray that ultimately they would begin to fight your battle as opposed to the battle that Satan wants them to fight. So, Father, I pray that in your son's name. Amen. Amen. Thanks, guys. Amen. See you.
There's some yellow comment cards. If you don't have to fill them out right away, you can take them and fill them out and hand them to ushers. Thank you, guys.